Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Perhaps the most important thing that our practice can show us is that if we look very, very carefully at our lives, we can see that everything in this world is in perfect harmony. And we also come to understand that because of our desires and our ambitions and our judgments, we don't see it. We don't see the harmony and we don't feel it because the discriminating activity of the mind, it just gets in the way. So instead, we see chaos and dysfunction and not harmony. And we come to feel that harmony is out of reach. And that is the way I think most people feel about their lives. Harmony is very rare and consistently out of reach. So this, the inherent harmony that we are born with is not such a simple thing. It's not easy to understand and accept unless we see the world and we see the things of the world through the eyes of practice. So in the modern world, of course, our view of this world is mostly objective and mostly logical and mostly intellectual. And that way of seeing the world makes us think that everything in the world is totally independent, that things are independent from each other, and that total separation from each other is our true state, and that people and the things of the world are constantly acting on their own. But the truth is, the truth that we will come to see through our practice, and of course what we read and what we hear, is that all things are interdependent. Or in other words, all things are continually dependent on one another. And that's because all things change. Because all things are continually changing, they cannot be independent. In other words, the transiency and the temporary existence of each of us and of each thing is defined by the transient existence of all other things. Or in other words, nothing in this world has its own special, unique nature. So our way or our practice is to let go of ideas of a unique and independent self, and let go of ideas that all things are an independent self. Instead, our practice encourages us to see Buddha in all things, even in the smallest grain of sand or dust. It means that everything in this world large or small. A tiny dust of the infinite cosmos. Everything is Buddha. And we practice to nurture and explore this understanding. So we say that when we take care of everything, we are taking care of Buddha. And when we respect everything and everyone equally, we are paying homage to Buddha. So paying homage to Buddha is not just in a ceremony or in the Zendo. In all the activities of our life, we pay homage to harmony. By treating things and by treating people and treating activities with respect. So our practice is really to treat everything as we would treat the Buddha. So in a practical matter, in our daily life, we have to take care of each thing and each person separately, one at a time. In a series of activities in our life and in a series of meetings that are continuous. But behind that taking care, we have to start by respecting our practice. Our practice is the foundation for our taking care. We take care of each other and we take care of things through our practice, by keeping things continuously inclusive, and not separating things from each other. Because without practice, things don't mean so much. We come to practice and we continue our practice because we want to acknowledge the deepest meaning of our lives and of our everyday world. And it's because of our practice that things have meaning. We express our practice by offering our effort and by offering an attitude of respect. For example, it's easy to offer flowers. Part of our practice at Kanado is to offer flowers. We offer flowers and we arrange them in a beautiful way. And we are pleased how they adorn the altar or our home. But can we offer our daily effort in this way when there are other people involved? When ambition and competition arises? A flower does not compete with us. Our cat or our dog does not compete with us. So our relationship with them naturally flows with harmony, and it is easy to love them without reservation. But with each other, with other people, sometimes it isn't so easy. If we respect our practice and continue our practice with trust, we can see all things as they are. And that includes other people. And we can see that they and all things are Buddha, and that they are not independent from each other or from us. Then there is no feeling of separation and no feeling of competition. There is only a feeling of warmth and respect. So when we nurture the Buddhist viewpoint, when we have a Buddhist viewpoint, we will appreciate and we will understand emptiness. And in order to do so, we have to let go of an intellectual view of things, the view where everything seems permanent and all things seem to have a unique core and are independent from each other. So we start by appreciating that everything changes. But at the same time, we have to talk about things and take care of things and each other as if we were independent and substantial. And that's the only way we can live together in this world. So even though all things are impermanent and constantly changing and empty, in daily life, we have to treat them objectively so that we can do things with each other. When we respect all things by appreciating their true nature, there is no problem going back and forth between substantial and empty. And this is the key to practice. In order to live with freedom in this world, we have to make a continuous effort. We may have great successes, or we may have disappointments and difficulties. But when we sincerely work on our difficulties, we learn how to go beyond difficulties and find the freedom of our mind. The foundation of Buddhism is based on a Buddhist statement that everyone suffers. It's true. In our life, troubles are inevitable. Problems are inevitable. But rather than complain, We let these troubles teach us. We learn from our difficulties. And we learn from how we respond to difficulties. And through this practice, we learn the meaning of making an effort. The Buddhist way of life is a continuous effort. To embrace whatever happens in our lives, whether it's pleasant or it's a trouble, we make a continuous effort and embracing. And we say, in our practice, we say that we make an effort, we make our effort moment by moment. But the truth is, actually, there are no moments. There's no such thing as a moment. There is just a continuous forever. In other words, the present never ceases. So freedom means to become content with the life we have at present. No matter how it may be measured on a scale of good or bad, we are content with the life we have at present. Freedom is to be untroubled, even though we may not have much. And even though we may continually have ideas for improving our life or advancing our life. But to be satisfied, to be content with what we have in the present, without measuring it, without measuring its goodness or its badness, to be satisfied is how we respect our life. And that is wisdom. And when we are satisfied in this way, there are no more desires. And this is how we cut off the source of suffering. But if we lose respect, if we cannot see things as they are, if we lose our way, it becomes very difficult to be helped by the kindness of others. True help arises when we make our effort continuously, whatever our situation may be, and to rely on our own efforts to settle our life. Our family and our friends can help us when we have a difficulty or when there's trouble. But that help is only temporary, because true help is more than fixing a problem. We have to understand how we limit ourselves. And we work on relieving those limitations, material and emotional, but especially spiritual. So it is important to have a proper attitude regarding our spiritual practice. We should not to expect we should not expect to obtain anything of value from it. We should not expect to obtain fame or power or wealth or even the appreciation of others. Our practice is about revealing our own inherent wisdom. That is, our practice is about expressing Buddha's wisdom. Wisdom is not interested in achieving anything, only to see the world as it truly is. So wisdom is not something that we use to solve problems. We each have to make our own effort without limitation. And when we sincerely make our effort, when we sincerely continue to practice, wisdom will show us what to do. But without our continual effort, wisdom won't be present. Thank you. Does anyone have a question?
Yes, I think Travis has a hand up.
Oh, Travis. Hi. Hi, Travis.
Hi, Les. Thank you for your talk. I was really struck by what you said about living in homage to harmony. And I think about this like it's a kind of fairness in the more maybe traditional meaning in the world of the word, like fair. And I think that is, you know, treating everything with respect and care, as you said. So how do you think about that? The seeing the world as fair in the bigger sense.
Yeah, the world is neither fair nor unfair, you know. But that's
Is it beautiful? I mean, is it the way that you described the present as a never ceasing, and the contentness that we have when we're living like that. I, and you were saying earlier about going from the substantial to the empty, like we have to create some kind of identity for ourselves, but not holding on to that or seeing that as a kind of essence that I appreciate what you said about homage to harmony, like living with that. Yeah. be is it acceptance then?
Yeah, in some measure, it's about acceptance. Here we are in our life, moment by moment, and when we really understand what's going on, we are very content to be here, whether it's things are up or things are down, whether we judge things as pleasant or unpleasant, good or bad, peaceful or threatening, we're here. We're part of the evolution of this life, wherever it came from. We don't know. We don't know where we came. We don't know where it came from. You know, we don't know. Right. Scientists are sending extraordinary vehicles into outer space to understand, you know, the birth of the universe. But even if they discover what that is, that's not where we came from. And we may never know what that is. My guess is we never will. We're born, and we live a life, and we die, and we don't know why this happened. You know, some people postulate that there's a deity that started it, but if you put that aside, you realize we don't know. But yet, here we are, part of it and evolving with it. And that is a source of constant joy. I'm part of this. Wow. And today is a good day and tomorrow is a bad day. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
We find our freedom and our contentment in just being part of evolving with everybody else without separation. That's very joyful.
Yeah.
So yes, acceptance is part of that.
And the effort is easier.
Oh yeah.
When the some kind of substantial achievement's taken away.
Yeah. Thank you. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Les. Thank you so much for your talk. So many things to ponder and absorb and think about. I was particularly struck by your discussion of competition as being so symptomatic of the view of the world as separated, and then competition arises between these separated entities. But I'm kind of scratching my head a little bit about whether this may be another opportunity to experience or search for the harmony of difference and equality. One of the things, the main thing really, that I've been doing with my time since I retired is that I've been coaching student robotics. And one of the things that I really like about the way that that whole thing is organized is their emphasis. I mean, they're organizing these competitions between thousands of teams worldwide of these students building these robots and competing with each other. And yet one of the fundamental principles is that competition and cooperation are just two sides of the same coin. And in fact, they even have a slightly sort of corny sounding term for this. They call it cooperation. And as sort of funny as that might sound, they're quite serious about it. If you go to some of these robotics contests, you'll find these teams will be furiously competing with each other on the field. And then the minute that they're done with that, they're helping each other out. You know, if the robot breaks and they need a part, somebody else will give it to them, will loan them a tool, will give them advice. And really, what they're trying to do is use competition as a tool to really work and grow together. They compete in order to do better, not in order to beat each other. And I'm kind of wondering if that model isn't really something that could generalize more broadly in life, as not competition as a gaining idea, but right. competition as an opportunity to grow together. I'm particularly wondering in the context of our practice about the formal practice of Dharma combat, which I don't believe is something that we do in our tradition. I don't know if that's a Rinzai thing or what, but it seems like that would be a way that this whole idea of something that on the surface is competitive, but actually involves growth together, might even be embedded in our Zen practice. And I wonder if you have any insights into that.
Yeah. The examples you gave, I think it's leads to misunderstanding when we apply the term competition. I think when you have this in the robotics tournament that you spoke about, when there is competition, when it's called competition, that's a little bit of misleading. I think it's really a game. What the young people are doing with each other, they're playing a game, and somebody will win, and it's a fun thing to do. The competition that's really harmful is the competition that is not a game, where the goal of the competition is to destroy the other person, not to cooperate and not to have a good time, to disrupt and destroy, you know? And they lose and you win. So I think there are things we do with each other in the world that look like competition, but we're really playing a game. You know, if you, and Travis could speak to this better than anybody else, I bet, when you play a game of tennis with anyone, you're competing. We call it competing, but it's a game. And at the end of it, we shake hands, we have a big laugh, and we go out and have a party. That's not the competition that is getting in our way. So I wish we had a different term for the kind of competition that you were describing earlier.
Hopefully not something so funny sounding as cooperation.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. But I think we have to work on that. Yeah.
Just so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is John Mark. You started off with a phrase that for me was memorable. You said the world is perfect. And it just kind of resonated in my mind. And then I thought of my day and how it's very hard for me to say whether it was a good day or a bad day, because there's so much uncertainty in the perception of the day. You know, there were some times when I was waiting for an email because I was angry with somebody, and then the email comes and it's like, oh, there was no problem. There are just so many different threads going on that it's confusing. And maybe that is just, in reflection, some very essential thing about the world, about life, is to realize that. And then I come here and I realize this is a gem here to have this center. And it just kind of strikes me that maybe I didn't realize that. And all of a sudden it became a realization. So I'm just reflecting on how variable, uncertain, how the perceptions are so confused in the day to day.
The mental capacity of each of us is different. Some people have great capacity, and some of us are a little bit limited. The ones with great capacity are considered to be really, really smart. The rest of us are okay. But sometimes there's so much going on in our life, so many activities and so many relationships, and we can't handle it all. Our capacity is limited. Or in other words, too much multitasking. I haven't heard that word in a long time, but we know what that means. Not enough time or energy or resources to take care of everything that's crying out to be taken care of. And this is, you know, we've talked about it before. This is a problem of the modern world. We are giving each other, as a society and as a culture, we are giving each other so many tasks to do all at once, it seems like. And many people are discovering that now and looking for a simpler life where they don't feel so overwhelmed with so many things to do and the sense of feeling out of control and feeling that the whole world is nothing but chaos. If we do want to get a feel for the harmony that exists inherently, we have to simplify our life. We shouldn't go beyond our capacities to take care of things at the same time. And our practice will help us recognize our limit. Sometimes we may say, a lot of things to do, but I can do more. Or we might say, well, that's enough. I'm going to stop right there. I'll take care of these five and the seven, eight, and nine later. So our practice will help us see our limits and not judge whether our limit is large or small. Just take care of what we can take care of in a way that's compassionate and with quality. And that's beneficial. And if we discover that we're so overwhelmed that we can't do that, we really need to back off and simplify things so that we can take care of things that bring benefit and joy to each other. It's a common problem. It's part of the modern world, and our practice helps us recognize it and find freedom in learning how to manage it.
Yeah, yes, we were often called overachievers, and we thought that was a good thing.
Yeah. Couldn't hear.
He said we were often called overachievers.
Oh.
We thought that was a good thing.
We did.
Yeah.
We did. Do you all feel that more and more people are recognizing that concept is kind of harmful, or it's not as good as we thought it was?
Yes, yes, I think that's the point.
From a very practical standpoint, you know, in my own life, and I wouldn't claim that this is a Buddhist point of view or anything like that, but if I'm doing a number of things and one more thing comes up, and if I say, oh, I can do that, I like to stop and reflect for a moment and say, is there a cost associated with that? A cost to myself, a cost to my family, a cost to my friends, a cost to quality of life. Before I go ahead and say, okay, I'll do that extra thing, what am I giving up to do that? I don't think I wouldn't claim that's a Buddhist point of view, but that's that's how I try to manage my own life. But, you know, in a way, if I can continue on that theme for just a moment and talk maybe a little bit personally, in a way, by not considering the cost or the future cost of doing something, we get ourselves in trouble. the Industrial Revolution brought us many advantages and improved the quality of life, but there are downsides. There have been downsides to some of our advancements. And we, the discussion about artificial intelligence right now, people are saying, wait a minute, this looks like a good thing, but what's the cost? What's the potential cost? So to me, it's encouraging that some influential people are saying, let's wait and think about the cost of doing this. That's kind of rare these days. We seem to plunge ahead and do something because it looks good without thinking about some future cost and some problem that could be created. I remember some years ago, many years ago, when global warming was beginning to be recognized and when there was some politician who said, global warming is a hoax. You remember that? I don't know who that was. You remember somebody who said that? Global warming is a hoax.
Still saying it.
They're still saying it, yeah. Well, that's unwillingness to look at the potential downside of something that looks like a great advancement. Anyway, that's enough of that. Thank you. Lini.
Thank you, Les. I'm confused about harmony. I don't feel that I live with harmony even when I'm doing Zazen. So how can we know this harmony?
That can be a very troublesome thought. Where is this harmony? Why don't I feel in harmony?
So stop looking for it.
Yes, because you can't find it outside yourself. So you cannot look for it. You cannot search for it. It's not around the next bend, you know. You carry it with you. So I think the best thing to do is to simply continue your practice and continue to trust what it is you are doing in a world that often doesn't feel harmonious. Continue expressing your true self in the moment, no matter how the world seems to be treating you.
Yeah, trust seems important.
Oh.
Yeah.
We have to trust, we have to learn to trust that everybody is making their best effort, even though it may appear that some are not. But in their own way, they are trying to make their best effort. There's something on the television news earlier today. In San Francisco, in the San Francisco prison system, some of the inmates earned their GED. And there was a ceremony where they were given their high school diploma. And the smiles on those faces and the joy of these men and women, they were all wearing masks, I guess, because of COVID. And they were showing off, you know, their certificates. They have graduated high school. And what they said was, you know, I got in this trouble and I was put in jail because I didn't make the effort. But I made the effort in these last few years, and now I have a future. And whoever invented that program needs to be rewarded. But the smiles on the faces of these people who are really down and out, but who made an effort to do what they couldn't or wouldn't do in earlier years, is remarkable. And I get the feeling that that transformation is going to make them a very big contributors to whatever it is they do. Oh, Anna. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Les.
Hi.
When you were talking about capacity, that idea of right effort came up for me too. I think maybe because when there's low capacity, you think, oh, or at least I think sometimes maybe more effort will make up for it. And I realized I sometimes think about effort as like a type of busyness, like things to do and, you know, work harder. And I realized that's probably not really what right effort means, because it can be a piece too. So I wondered if you'd talk a little bit about right effort.
And just do the best you can in each moment, and don't measure it on a scale of high or low. Just, this is what I can do. This is my capacity. We make a pledge to ourselves that when we do something, we will do it. We will bring all of our capacity to it. So there's a problem in trying to do too much beyond our capacity. And sometimes we create a problem when we say, oh, that's good enough. And we don't use all the capacity that we could have used. Oh, I think I'll stop here. That's good enough. What's the expression, the common expression, good enough for government work, you know? Haven't heard that one in a long time, but that always stuck with me. We should just make our best effort in every moment without taking shortcuts. And without creating a problem for ourselves. It's a balance.
Thank you, Les.
Oh, hi, Phil. Phil?
Hi, Les. I was just turning my mute off.
Okay.
These last few questions reminded me of something that you said at the end of your formal part of your talk, and I was going to ask about, but also to say that I liked the notion was that if we make our best effort, I think you said wisdom will show us what to do, but wisdom won't solve our problems. There's something very nice. The feeling I got from it is that something emerges just out of our making our best effort that connects us with, I wondered if you might comment a little further on that. It seems to resonate with what people have been asking about. And Or maybe I'm getting it wrong. I just trying to remember exactly what,
Well, one of Suzuki Roshi's most memorable quotes, one of the things that we all remember when he said, "It is the readiness of mind that is wisdom." You know, wisdom is not some kind of information or great insight into truth or anything like that. It's when we are ready, when the mind is ready to see things as they are without cover up or distortion, when we make our best effort, when we make our best effort to see things as they are, that's wisdom. You know, the attitude that says, "I'm not going to compromise with my effort," that's wisdom. Thanks, Bill. Yes, Dave.
Just briefly, that's what you just said, and Anna's question reminded me of something that I read recently. I can't quote it verbatim, but basically it said, right effort arises not through some sort of sheer force of will or stubborn egoistic stubbornness, but when the conditions for its arising have been established and it arises naturally. I rather like that.
Yeah, and the conditions are not external.
Just so.
Yeah.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's KANNON.org.